When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
As the fate of pennies goes, you turned up the other day half buried next to a 7-Up bottle cap and a ruined pack of matches from the El Vado Motel, a vintage Lincoln, scolding me. I fell out in 1983 out of that pocket you never mended, just allowing your change to fall all over the place. Disc. I retrieved you, never thinking that maybe there's no luck left in a tarnished penny. From 1977, the year Elvis died, father left, and I learned to disappear. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books and Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. And today I'm talking to Cynthia Sylvester about her debut story collection, The Half-White Album. Stories of Diné, commonly known as Navajo culture and memory, told by different characters at different times, but mostly focused on the 1970s. Each story is supported by one of the songs covered by the group, the covers. A mother recalling her daughter running away from the missionary school, a daughter remembering when her mother was healthy. Characters suffer or are healed. They dream of hope or they leave home. They sneak into cemeteries or bury things outside. And the stories describe hope, frustration, or acceptance. Hi, Cynthia. Thanks for joining me today.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
So what was the first story you wrote in this collection, and how did you come to turn it into a book?
Well, this collection took quite a while. This is a well over a decade of work. And as I recall, the very first story is what is now called Pineywood Hills. It was originally called We Wander, and it was written because I had moved back from North Carolina, where I moved for about 13 years, back home here to Albuquerque. And I was sort of missing their very interesting terms that they would use oftentimes, some slang and so forth. And I just loved it. And so the story was really written so that I could remember the way they talked.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
So the sections are divided into songs on an album. Can you talk about the title and how you came up with the different sections?
Yeah, well, one of the first stories I wrote for this was called Wild Horses. And of course, that was actually named after a song by the Rolling Stones. And it's the last story in the book. And how the book ended up being, so right away, you know, when I realized that I had music as a huge influence for me, I guess some people have movies or poems or sculptures or paintings. For me, music is something that just, it makes me think of certain times, it creates atmosphere. So, and I'm half, you know, half Diné and half Anglo. So the stories were kind of revolving around some of those issues or topics. And so the Half White Album, it's what I came up with because, of course, the Beatles' The White Album, a classic album. So the White Album is, you know, I thought would be a great way to place it. And how it became structured like the way it is that it was actually originally structured after a very old ceremony. And once the book was put into place the way I've done it, that kind of guided me as to where to put these pieces that I'd written over quite a period of time. Then I removed that scaffolding and I made each chapter a venue, a concert, and then chose to have this fictitious band lead us through through the book.
I loved how you did that. I loved that so many of the songs are from my decade too, the 70s. And the little snippets of music, Joan Baez, Janis Ian. I also used to dream about a famous singer inviting me up on the stage. And I sang many of those songs. I used to be a musician. I loved that part. So I totally recognize the genre. Can you say something about it? 70s music.
Well, I mean, that's what I listen to. You know, I'm not a spring chicken. And so, of course, when we were growing up, you know, the radio was a huge thing. That's a lot of what was our entertainment. And so I would listen to, you know, Casey Kasem Top 40. And then as I got older and FM, you know, came along, I, you know, got into a lot of rock and roll, you know, Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin. And, you know, so all of those bring memories to me. And actually, the other part of it is that, you know, traditionally, in many Native cultures, you know, ceremony is a combination of music and storytelling and art, and it involves community. And that's kind of what, you know, some of the best concerts are in a way. Mm-hmm. You leave there feeling like you experienced something. And I feel like the combination of the stories in this book combine it with the music. If on my website there is the University of New Mexico who published this, they created a playlist, and there's a Spotify playlist, or you can just go to I'm not trying to promote anybody, but there's a playlist there if you look up the Half White album. And then when I launched the book, I actually had I have a band, and we've done about three different shows with a full band.
Right, because there's a band.
Wow, that's
so interesting. So, okay, so we meet, let's talk about the character, a few of the characters. We can't talk about them all, but we meet Ruth early on. She comes up often, but at first she's 10 years old, running away from the missionary school. It's a powerful story. Can you talk about the missionary schools?
Yeah, I mean, that story is placed at the beginning because truly, you know, that's where it all begins, is with our mothers. And being Dene, my clan is my mother's clan, my mother's clan. So even though I never got to meet my grandmother, I always, because she passed before I was born, I always thought how awful it would have been to have had your children taken from you and sent to boarding school and be told that you were not capable of raising them. And then every time you see them, they're different. They look different. They act different. They speak a different language. And so that book really is the opening to the entire book.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruth's, the fictitious, and that story is fiction based on what I wanted to have a story with the point of view of that woman who would have been my grandmother during that time period. It would, in this case, would have been the, you know, early 1900s. Mm-hmm. So Ruth, of course, then moves on into our contemporary times, right? So she grows up and...
Okay, we won't talk about that now. We'll get back to Ruth. Tribal myths and stories are interspersed throughout the book. Can you talk about how you learned them and what they mean for you?
Well, okay. So just, these are stories that I created. Being from a culture where the assimilation process was done, I was raised not only as an urban native, but as a suburban native.
Oh.
You know, I was not raised on the Dene Ta. My mother moved out into this world, I call it, and married my father, who was Anglo. And so we didn't learn a lot of our traditional stories because of assimilation. And so this is really my story. This is my creation story. These aren't traditional stories. These are the stories I made up that I tell myself. And like I said, sort of as a ceremony for me, and maybe for others too, who knows, it touches other people, to provide me those things, you know, that are very important. Animal stories and stories about, I think there's one little snippet of a story in one of them about vanity. When you, Ma'i the coyote, he's good at teaching about vanity. And these are all mine. These are not traditional stories. I
created something. I didn't realize that. I thought you were bringing up tradition. Wow, you invented. But yes. They said they could have passed. You know, they could have passed. So you
well,
also.
Well, I mean, really, they are. They do pass because I am Native.
There you go. You also bring up roses, trees, ghosts, and home. Also themes that weave through the stories. Is there a connection for you to any of those?
And I'm saying, I heard the ghosts, and what were the other three?
Roses come up. Trees, the ghosts, and home.
Well, home. Yeah. Home, I think, is probably the biggest theme in that kind of holds the book together. You know, as you probably saw, the threads of mother and daughter are really what kind of hold the collection together. And of course, home is traditionally for me, mother. You know, I can never be lost because I know who my mother's mother's mother was, even though I never got to meet them. But then home is also a place, you know, there's a home in the book that features prominently, that old ranch style house. Home is also maybe a state or a city. Most of these are set in sort of the Albuquerque area. Some set on the Dene Ta, also known as the Navajo Reservation. And then of course, I think home is the body, you know, and trying to find that place where we feel at home with ourselves. And a lot of the characters are grappling with that sense of having to make tough decisions, maybe having lost their home, or everything's changing around them, things that everybody goes through, right? Yeah. You know, and then as far as roses go, I didn't realize that. yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that roses played a, but it's funny how I love when other people see things in the book and then they show it to me, because your mind, when you create things, it makes connections for you sometimes that you don't, you aren't really trying to do, but you get lucky sometimes.
Yeah. There's a story about bringing a casino to Soaring Eagle, and that was before casinos dotted the landscape. It seemed like in the beginning. Can you say more?
Yes, you know, well, you know, when I was born and raised here in New Mexico, and of course I moved away for a while. And when I came home, yeah, there were casinos everywhere. And I saw some of the good things that come from it, which is jobs, clinics, schools, that have, especially here on in New Mexico, we have, you know, Pueblo tribes, 19 Pueblo tribes, and many of them have just really blossomed because of this and been able to get some more autonomy because of it. But then you also see the other side, the side that gambling can be an addiction just like anything else. And so that story, Little Wing, it was my way of looking at both sides of it. Looking at it from the traditionalist sense, Tini Chalili, and then also from Simon Begay's point of view, who is the chapter president, and he thinks he's trying to do what's best for the tribe as well. So yeah, it was so that I could grapple with both sides of it, and I think that's what's important in life, is to try and see the point of view of other people, even though they may not have the same point of view as you.
Yeah. Several stories mention sneaking into cemeteries to bury people or things. What intrigues you about that?
Well, I mean, part of some of the stories in there are nonfiction. And so, yeah, so my mom, you know, she, you know, said that where she wanted to be placed was in a very old cemetery where her parents are placed, and that cemetery is closed. And so, you know, she wasn't terribly concerned with how I was going to do that. So that's kind of, it was a little bit of a, I don't want to say a joke between us, but I think there's a line in the book where only a Navajo like her would joke about burning a body and sneaking around with it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, because that it isn't traditional. Navajos don't traditionally believe in cremation, so that kind of put us on another side of the of a spectrum. Not a spectrum, but that's not a traditional thing.
Irby Shorty, he was supposed to be the next great leader of their band of Diné. Does that mean the is also the same word for Navajo as a different word? Can you explain?
Yes, Diné is the is what we call ourselves. Navajo.
Okay.
Navajo is actually the word that was given to us, just like Cherokee or, you know, Sandia, Pueblo here, you know. So that's the name that we call ourselves, the Diné, which means the people.
Okay.
That story was written because you know, a lot of the stories in here are written. You talked earlier about ghosts, and ghosts sometimes too are people, not just, you know, spirits that may haunt us. I don't know if anybody else feels that way or not, but also things that haunt us, feelings that haunt us, things that maybe never got laid to rest. And so for me, that particular story was about a Navajo gentleman, a Diné gentleman, young man who died of AIDS. And I didn't want him to be forgotten. I didn't want, because during that time period, so many people were forgotten because of shame, because of whatever. And so I felt the way of giving him power was to say he was supposed to be the next great leader of our band of the Diné. That meaning that a band would be this group of us, this family that has been created, that lives here now in this urban setting. Because, you know, there are families that live not on the reservation, who live in cities, right? And we, so that's what that story is about. Two things there.
Uh-huh. In another story, Joe does an eagle dance. Simon turns into an eagle, and a convocation of eagles show up for Teeny and Joe. So can you talk about do eagles have a special meaning?
Oh, well, I mean, of course, I think, yeah, you know, even to non-native people, eagles are a very powerful being, spirit, creature. They're beautiful. So there are traditionally, you know, eagle dances. And then if you go to, say, a powwow, which is not a ceremony, but you go to a powwow and you see the eagle dances, they're beautiful. And it's how people can create this dance that where they inhabit the spirit of the animal. And in this case, you know, the eagle, in my mind anyway, the eagle is what takes the prayers to the creator. And so that's kind of the idea behind that, you know, mm-hmm. to soar, and bring good thoughts, I guess you could say, or at least these hopes to their creator.
Yeah. Jeannie J is another character who shows up several times. She recalls her aunt telling her not to let anyone know she's Navajo, but more than that, she shouldn't let anyone know that she's lesbian. Can you say a bit more about Jeannie and what her aunt requires of her.
Well, so Jeannie J is actually the lead singer in the fictitious band, the Nomads. Not the Nomads, the Covers. That's the name of the fictitious band. So she, you know, each little band member has said something about the venue before. And in that particular one, she's recalling that. And that, you know, I think really what it is that her auntie told her, don't let anybody know you're Navajo, which is actually something my aunt told me one time. And I'm not really sure why, but I would imagine because, you know, there was such a stigma and such prejudice against Native people that she figured it might be better for me if people didn't know. Maybe
to protect you.
I mean, you know, that's just the thing, and it goes throughout the book, is that not only are the characters cryptic, but you know, I think I come from a family that's somewhat cryptic. And so you're always supposed to try and figure things out and never, instead of just asking why, you know. But then Jeannie J was like, well, that, you know, that doesn't bother me as much as being found out as a lesbian. Because again, that is also that is a group of people that is has prejudice against them. And maybe mm-hmm. you're better off people not knowing it, whether it's your job or whatever, your neighbors, who knows? So there's a lot of hiding that goes on in this book.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the characters are also hiding who they truly are, and for various reasons. And of course, that's what kind of brings some of the discord for characters, is that they're having to hold on to things that, you know, they may damage that secret that Ruth is in that story with her daughter. And she's been holding on to something for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A secret.
Yes, she has. And then in one final story, I want to talk about a pair of twins say they've been banished from the Dinata because the brother's gay and the sister's lesbian. Uh-huh. Well, how is homosexuality viewed in the tribe?
Well, you know, because of acculturation, there still is quite a bit of prejudice against homosexual people, transgender people. I can't speak for every single tribe, and I can't speak for every single Diné person. But, you know, same-sex marriage is not recognized by the Navajo Nation yet. Mm. And we are one of the largest tribes in the country. And so, you know, I think that speaks volumes. But I also, within that story, you know, the twin says, you know, we told our mother, you know, because they're hiding from their mother also. These mythical creatures mythical characters are hiding from their mother, as is the other character. And they said, we told our mother, you know, about the powerful Nadle. Nadle is a very, what homosexual people were called, and they had a special place in the tribe. And so she said, yes, but we don't live in the past. And so, you know, again, that sort of connects to the whole story, is that so much of the past, not just for Ruth and her daughter and for Shem and the world that has to be lived in now. And so that's where that story comes from.
One final question. What are you working on next?
Well, I'm working on a novel that's set here in Albuquerque, and it has similar themes, except that it's really, you know, not at all like this. Although there is a chapter in this book that is an excerpt from the novel. It's in the book, it's called Best Days of My Life. And so it's about five women who played basketball together when they were young. And now flash forward to the present day, they're kind of grappling not only with the loss that they had years and years ago on the court, which was pretty devastating, but really is a reflection of the losses they had in their life. And so they're trying to formulate ways to get back together and have a rematch of this last game.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good. Wow. Well, yeah. I wish you the best of luck on the Half White album and on the work in progress. Thank you so much for joining me today, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
And thank you for joining me. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking to Cynthia Sylvester about her story collection, The Half White Album. Hope you all have something great to read tonight, and always happy reading.